I'm going to take you to the summer of 2009. It is Pro Tour Honolulu, the island tropical paradise Pro Tour, and there is a real buzz in the air about a young man from the United States of America who, in some ways, doesn't even have a name. He has a handle, a Magic Online handle, the freak on Magic Online, who turns out to be the man who's sitting beside me, and that is Brad Nelson. Brad, first of all, welcome to the show, and thanks for giving us your time on the eve of Pro Tour San Juan.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here.
So, let's go to the start of the Honolulu experience. How did you qualify?
I played in a 42-person PTQ.
42? When was that? On the moon?
Close. It was in Canada.
You can't say that. They're not even a real country anyway. That's what South Park says. All right, so 42-player PTQ in Canada, and you win that.
Yes.
Okay, what was the format there?
Extended.
Mm-hmm. And what did you play?
Tesseract Control.
All right. Are you naturally a control player?
No, I just like to play the best deck, and okay. No one tested against it all format, so you pretty much got to do whatever you wanted in the games.
All right. So you qualify there. Let's take you then to Honolulu itself. What was your experience, what I might call around the tournament, the hoopla, the player party, which you can hear going on in the background here, and just the whole kind of the surrounds of the event?
It was a surreal moment. Like, you finally get there, and you get to be around all the people you see in coverage, because, like, when I was starting to play Magic competitively, you know, coverage for Pro Tours was, like, the Super Bowl to me. I would, you know, 11 o'clock at night was the round one of Top 8, and I'd be up until 5 in the morning, then I'd go to work, and so just getting to meet everyone, it was great, and meeting all the people I tested with on Magic Online, and it's a great experience. Just everyone's so happy the night before Pro Tour.
There is a belief in sports such as tennis that when you first make a Grand Slam, quarterfinal, or a semifinal, it's all a bit overwhelming because no one has explained to you before that you have to bow to the royal box or you have to do the press conference at 2 p.m. and there's this court to practice on or whatever. And in some ways, all that surroundings must be a little bit, in a sense, energy sapping, because at the end of it all, once you've had the food and you've met all these people in this high energy event, then you have to sit down and play some Magic.
That is very true. Like, I had the jitters starting off. Like, the energy, I wasn't able to control it. But it was a draining experience. Like, after round 8 of day 1, I couldn't even keep my eyes open. Like, of all the long days, I just wasn't prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that was? Was it what went before day 1, or was it just the experience of the perception of extra intensity with every round within a Pro Tour?
That's exactly what it was. Like, I was playing against a lot of good players. I had a really hard gauntlet day 1, and I guess I'd have to say, you know, 50-minute rounds playing at my first Pro Tour. I didn't want to make any mistakes. I wanted to play good. I felt really good, but the days go long. Like, it's just hard work. I tried really hard, and it was more than my body was used to.
Mm-hmm. Let's go into day 2, then. When you go to bed, utterly shattered on day 1, whereabouts are you in the field, and what are you expecting out of day 2?
My goal was to play as best as I could the whole tournament. I didn't know what to expect at a Pro Tour, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to feel good about myself. But I 6-2 day 1, and that's exactly where I felt I could do on day 2. I just wanted another 6-2 to win 3 and lose 1, and I felt like I could do that.
Now, that intrigues me, because on the face of it, I'm doing the math, and that puts you at, like, 12-4, and that puts you in the mix but not quite there. Did you feel, therefore, coming into your first Pro Tour, did you not really have aspirations of the top 8?
I don't think you can. I think you have to just play around as it goes. And my goal was 6-2. I thought it was a reasonable. Like, if you shoot for the moon too high, the swings get a little hard. And if your only goal is to win a tournament, you're not going to, like, look at the shot next. Like, I was a golfer for many years, and, you know, it taught me to look at the next shot, don't worry about anything else. And I just go in from now I've trained myself to just go from game to game. Like, I don't even think about matches. If I lose game 1, I just look at game 2, and I'm not worried about what am I going to do on the draw game 3. Like, it's just step by step.
Right, absolutely one step at a time. In the end, we come down to round 15, and you're sort of in the hunt, still, for top eight, and then the pairings get made for the last round, and it turns out, because it's constructed at that point, we're back on block constructed, table one is sitting four tables away from you, and table two is three tables away from you, and table three and table four, and as the round starts, all four of them stand up and leave. Now, it doesn't take much of a genius to work out that those eight people have decided that they're in the top eight no matter what. How did you feel starting that round 16, watching the top eight walk away?
I couldn't control it. Yep. The tournament was already set, and I had a match left to play. Like, I actually, after with three rounds left, I was X4, and I thought ninth was the best I could get, because right. I had friends that did the math, and they said it was going to be a hard lock, and ninth was my first. Like, at that point in the tournament, ninth was the best I could do, and I was just playing my matches.
And in that last round, you played Mark Glenister of England, who is one of our finest players, and I know that he was very excited to still be that high up in the last round. So you end up ninth, and that feels like a win then.
It was the best feeling ever. Like, I spent so much time playing Magic for so many years, and, like, right after I beat him, it was a hard match, and the first thing I do is I get up off my table, and there's my brother, ready to give me the biggest hug, and it was so rewarding just to know that I can come and fight with the best of them and succeed.
Did you get an energy rush from that? Did you then actually manage to go out on Saturday night, or were you just destroyed again?
Oh, I was... No, I had energy for a while. Like, we went out to eat and hung out, and I couldn't wipe the smile off my face. It was... It's probably one of my favorite moments of Magic yet.
You go home from Honolulu, and for people who've never been on the Pro Tour, it's very hard to explain, but the Pro Tour is such an unreal experience, because out there, there are people paying taxes and watching ESPN and ordering pizza and, you know, doing the chores and doing the ironing and mowing the lawn. And here, we're playing for $250,000 in prize money on the turn of a card with hundreds of smart people from all over the planet. You go home from Honolulu the first day after you get back, and you're just sitting there in your own home. What is that like, looking back on Honolulu in the light of that?
It took me a couple days, actually. Like, the next day I was still couldn't believe it. Like, I was looking through the coverage trying to get into it, but it wasn't until I got the check, actually, that
it felt real.
It felt real. It felt like an accomplishment. Like, it was insane. Like, coming back, my life also felt a little dull. Like, I feel more alive when I'm here. Like, that's very true.
It's high octane stuff. Yeah. It's the Formula One of gaming.
Yeah, it is. Like, they are the smartest people in the world here. Gamers are the most intelligent people I've ever met. I mean, we might not be the hardest working out there, but...
Although sometimes that, too.
Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah, I mean, for most, I'm not going to say everyone, but, like, it is, you get to have the conversations with people, especially about Magic, that you never get. And people here challenge you a lot more than in other places. I really do love coming to these Pro Tours.
I think also, apart from anything else, in a lot of life, you can go through life without having to prove that you're smart. You can be smart and make smart moves. But no one really says, okay then, you're smart, show me. And at Magic, every hour on the hour, a clock starts ticking down and says, okay, you're smart, show me.
That's very true. When I, growing up, I never got challenged. I played competitive sports, and I did okay at them, and I got jobs, and I did good at them, and I played them like their games, but you get challenged. It's just ridiculous how much people, like, how much pressure there is to do well, and how much competition there is, and how much you want to beat other people, even best friends. Yep. in a team draft, a casual team draft, you just want to win, and that's what you're fighting for, and it's the smartest people you can play against, and it's just exhilarating.
Let's take you back home then, and to Magic Online, where you made that reputation. My first question about that is, where do you actually play? Are you sitting there in your bed? Are you, like, do you have a comfy chair? Do you think of it as an office? How do you play Magic Online?
I actually, after Honolulu, the first thing I bought was a king-size bed. I always lived on a pretty bad bed my whole life, and that's the first thing I bought. And so that thing doesn't fit in my room too well. So I get out of bed, I take a step, I sit in a chair, and I have a desktop computer. It's my bedroom is my office. That's where I do all my business.
Yeah, that seems fair. Now, there are always distractions in Magic. In the real world, it's the players chatting away on the table next to you or friends coming to watch. Are there a lot of distractions at home? Are you someone who has MLB.com in the corner of your screen? Are you watching TV while you're playing? Do you have music on? Or is it all about business?
With Magic Online, it flows a little different than real life. I usually play with headphones on. Some relaxed music I listen to, like The Killers, Broken Bells, The Shins. Mm-hmm. Just something subtle in the background. And I don't let my roommates watch. It's a pressure. They like to sometimes, but I like to be in my room alone, especially when I'm playing high-level events.
Okay.
And it just flows like that. This is just a lesson. Do not be looking at Facebook or Hulu or anything while you're playing Magic. Like, you're not using the right parts of your brains, or you're overusing other ones, and you're not going to play tight Magic. You're not going to see the next three plays in advance, and you're going to lose games because of it, and you don't even know why.
Okay. If I go to my local Friday Night Magic, I know what the format's going to be. If I go to a PTQ 2 weeks on Saturday, I know what the format's going to be. Magic Online is an Aladdin's cave, because you fire it up, and even if you just click on draft, there are 15 different kinds of draft with different prize structures, different packs, different tournament systems. How do you sort of navigate your way through that? Because, you know, you can't possibly play in everything, but you strike me as someone who likes to kind of have a finger in every pie.
Yeah, you can play in everything.
You really?
I've tried it. I pretty much when I get on Moto, I don't have patience, so if an extended daily or a block or a standard or something is firing, I'll just jump in that right away. It's not too bad. I mean, it depends on your card collection, but when you play a lot, like, you can do that. Like, I think it depends on how much time you invest into the game, but as long as you keep a good, fix on the formats and you know what's going on, like, I think you can play multiple events at a time.
Okay, do you have particular favorites in formats?
Block. Block.
Always?
Yes, I love Block.
Why?
I love that it is a very small collection of cards. Like, Extended this season, I didn't like. It was 5 combo decks and Zoo. Like, Standard decks, there's a lot of powerful cards, and I really think that Block has the best interactions with spells. Like, Standard, you get, like, 2 different sets that don't really mix well together, and it's a format that a lot of people like. But Block, all of them were designed with each other in mind. And I like that it's a small format. There's a lot of manipulation you get. You get to know what everyone's going to do. And there's usually not a overpowering effect in the format. Besides, like, fairies, I can't think of a format that couldn't be solved.
Right. So you're actually with Block. Because it's small enough, you feel it's possible to sort of shoot for the absolute moon and say, I have actually the best 75 cards that exist.
Yeah. Not ever exist, but for today.
Yes, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah, you can have the best 75 for today, and then you can make the best 75 for tomorrow. It's exactly what me and Michael Jacob did for the Magic Online Championships.
Okay. We're going to come to that. Let's talk first. How does Magic Online improve your skills as a Magic player? I can see, obviously, the benefits of being able to play any time of day or night. That's fabulous, and always having people to play with. But on a technical level, are you aware of having edges over some players who are perhaps not as savvy with the Magic Online?
It actually works pretty interestingly, because Magic Online can help a player at any level. Beginning players can pay $10 to get it, and they can play casually with the stuff that you get set up with, and learn how all the triggers and turns go. So it's right there in front of you. It tells you how to play the game. You can't have any shortcuts, which is great for players that are learning how to maneuver. Like, a hard interaction would be kind of like Disciple of the Vault back in the day, or triggers, when 2 triggers happen on both sides of the table. Magic Online tells you whose goes on the stack first, and that's something that a lot of people have a tough time with. And as you get better at the game, it allows you to make friendships with people, and get their insight from across the world. Like, if you're just playing at your local FNM, you get those players' insights and anything that the websites, like Wizards of the Coast, put up for decklists. But now that you're on Magic Online, you get to talk to people. The skill level's higher. The competition's higher. You have, you know, it's survival of the fittest. You have to compete hard to be able to do well online. Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about metagames. I've only actually won one tournament in my life, and that was an English regionals. And the reason I won it was that I was given a deck that had been built 4 days before, which in those days, this is during Tempest and Mirage Visions kind of year, so it kind of ran about 1998. And quite frankly, going turn two Sultari Monk, turn three Imperial Armor was just the most brutal thing in the history of the game that week. And it was the most powerful feeling I've ever had playing Magic, because I simply could not lose, really, because I was just ahead of the metagame. Now, metagames then could be a month old before they shifted, sometimes even longer. How quick does the Magic Online metagame change in a big format like Standard or like Block?
I played a 75 in Standard at 4 p.m. one day in a daily event. And then I played it at 8 o'clock in a daily event, and I played the mirror match in a completely rogue deck.
Wow.
Yep, and he had my 75. So that just proves that it shifts fast. They put up a lot of deck lists, or all of them, very quickly on Magic Online. A lot of information goes through it. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, the 5Ks are great. They're great tournaments, because live tournaments are effectively where you want to go. You want to play a lot of Magic Online, but... you know, it's fun to go see your friends and stuff.
Yep.
But they put up all the information. Like, there's just a vast amount out there. Deck lists are everywhere. And yours end up out there really quickly. So being able to metagame is more important than to be able to brew. And I think consistency in yourself and in your deck is the most important.
And therefore, that's one of the reasons when you say, I like to play the best deck... it isn't a control preference or an aggro or combo. It is literally about positioning.
Yes, metagaming and positioning in a tournament is the best thing you can do. I mean, there's not much really else to say about that, I guess.
No, that's fine. I mean, the scary thing in some ways there is that, like I say, you go back a while and people are spending weeks gearing up for what they think a metagame will be, and you're saying certainly within 24 hours, it's just completely cycled over. It's like a 24-hour news cycle has changed the way that news works. It is magic news. That's what the metagame is, essentially. Now, let's take you to your first real-life top eight, and this comes at Nationals last year. How was that?
It was great. Even though Nationals isn't like a pro tour, getting a chance to play Sunday Magic was... a really, really good opportunity to just get to experience how five-game sets. I played Brett Piazza, and even though we went three games in the mirror, it was something I never experienced. Like, the idea that you can have mind games with your opponent because the match is going to go so long with how you sideboard and how you play out your matches. And it actually gave me edges for game threes. I never thought about how you could actually play a mind game going into game three with your opponent. And the experience that you're left with eight people. I've always wanted the experience to be the last man standing in that round. Like, even winning the tournament isn't as important as playing the last match.
Okay.
I want to play the last match in a tournament because competition is my favorite thing in the world, and that's the match I want to be in. The highest stakes there is.
I'm intrigued by the mind games aspect because, on the face of it, that's something that's very hard to do in Magic Online. Does it exist at all in Magic Online? Are the mind games you can play there?
Yes, it does exist. There's a lot of times that you can tap a land, untap some lands. Those are basic.
So basically I'm tapping my Path to Exile planes, even though I don't have Path to Exile, so they think it's coming.
And or like with Cryptic Command back in the day, you'd tap four and then you'd untap. And you put them on thinking you have it, because no one ever does that online. Like, they usually just tap their mana when they think you're playing solitaire in some way. Like, the mind can trick itself into thinking you're playing solitaire because you don't have an opponent in front of you, but you do. There's someone on the other side of the computer. And that's something that is lost in a lot of people's minds, and that's how you get to play with them. You get to make them forget they're playing an actual player. And so... if you play these, you know, human tricks with them, like taking a long time to think, or snap keeping, all these things can actually disrupt an opponent that's actually thinking. At least it influences me.
Okay. So you have the mind games of the best of five, and you get the competition there. And then later on in the year, you have your first Grand Prix Top 8, and that comes just before Worlds at Grand Prix Minneapolis. And in terms of pro points, that was a pretty significant weekend.
Yeah, that was a big one. I needed to... I don't remember, but I think I needed a top 64, the Worlds, or top 32, the Grand Prix, to get my 20 points for the season. And since I was having a good season, even though I started it, I mean, in the middle, I really wanted my 20 points. That was the most important thing. I wanted to keep riding out Magic. I didn't want to fall off right away. I was addicted to the Pro Tour scene, and I knew I could do it. I put a lot of work into it, and I knew I could take one of those tournaments, accomplish my goal in one of those tournaments.
Yeah. And the fact that you did it with one to spare, it's something you often see. We get to the penultimate Pro Tour of the year, and then all the pros will sit down and they'll map out the remaining 6 weeks of the season. And they'll go, really, I would like not to be going to Worlds still needing blank to reach my goal. And so you do see people like yourself going to those events. So you then go to Worlds with level 4 secured. You know you're coming back. You have your invite. And then you set your sights higher towards level 5, but along the way, there's a bit of a family casualty going on.
Well, actually, what's funny about that is I actually needed a top 62, now that I remember, the Pro Tour, to get level 4.
Yeah, okay.
And then once I did so well at the Grand Prix, then I needed to top 16 the Worlds to get level 6.
Yep.
So it was the same goal again. But yeah, me and my brother went to Worlds qualify together, and we were doing really, really well. We actually, through the entire tournament until the last round of day two, we won or lost the round together.
Okay.
And so we were at 7-2 at the same draft pod, and we both had a pretty miserable draft, and the worst thing happened. We both 0-2'd into the same round. Yeah. It was pretty devastating. But
yeah, and at that point, just for people at home doing the math, from 7-2 to 7-4, 4 was the absolute limit for top 8, so you knew that one of you was effectively going home in that last round.
Yes, and the reason we talked about it, we were going to, you know, duke it out, but Corey ended up just telling me that he was going to scoop to me because he knew I was trying to get my level, and that was more important for both of us. Like,
sure.
We've always split together, and that was the bigger accomplishment, is for me to try to get level 6.
Yeah. So you pile on, you end up at level 5 at the end of the year, and that, of course, means you can start this year with a serious goal of playing in everything, which you weren't able to do last year because of when you qualified. So coming into this year, what were you looking for?
To play the best Magic that I ever have before. I was not looking for level 6, level 8. I was content with level 4, but my game's been sloppy. It's been up and down.
Oh, okay.
And it was between Rome and San Diego. I did not play that good. San Diego was miserable for me. And I knew I had to make a change. So for the last 3 months, all I've been caring about is how well I've been playing. And I think that's all anyone should care about. Because the results will come if you're just confident in working on your own game.
See, I find this both fascinating and extremely reassuring in some ways. Because so much of Magic is about results. Because in the end, you know, it's the winner who has the trophy and the check and the girl and so on. And it's not just in the last 3 months. You've said it twice already in this interview that you don't care about the winning and losing. You love to win, but you don't care about the winning or losing if you're playing the best Magic you can. And you are self-regulating in that way. You don't look at, I finished 3rd, 17th, and 49th, and the 17th and 3rd was really good. You just go, how did I play in that match and that match and that match?
At Grand Prix Minneapolis, I made top 4. And I think I probably played every other match to full potential. Even though it was Zendikar block and it was pretty haymaker-ish, I didn't play great Magic. I made a lot of mistakes. And I think you can look at your results, but you're not going to learn anything from them. I learned that from Tom Ross, actually. He's very realistic, and he taught me that you just go into every round trying to do your best. You can't try to win, because this game will not always let you do that. But if you can try to play the best Magic you can, you're going to be happy with your result at the end of the day, no matter what happens.
Okay. Well, sometimes you can win. And sometimes you can win involves the Magic Online Championship Series. Now, frankly, the way this thing is set up just seems to me to feature incredibly absurd numbers of good Magic players from around the world congregating in front of their computers. Talk us through winning the Magic Online Championship Series qualifier.
Well, if anyone's seen the picture from the last Grand Prix,
yep,
of me holding the trophy, that's exactly the pose I had when I walked out to my roommate and told him I won. Exact same pose, but it was absurd. I tested a lot for that format with Michael Jacob, and we worked just an insane amount of hours on block. We broke the format, and going into that tournament, I knew me or him were going to win that tournament because we broke the format. Like, hands down, our deck went 33-4 on the day. Three of the losses were players that picked the deck up that day. I mean, counting LSV, I mean, he doesn't lose, but it was still him.
Yeah.
And it was pretty hard, but we put the work into it, and it was an undefined format, and we just got there. Like, I don't have much to say about that tournament, like, as an excitement.
It felt like knife through butter?
It did. It was knife through butter. I lost one game, and it was, like, a 20% chance of me losing it.
Okay. So that, of course, qualifies you for the Magic Online Extravaganza at the end of the year in Chiba, which means that you're now sort of one-third of the way, in fact, two-thirds of the way, towards the kind of Trinity, because you get to play in that event, which is going to have a ton of rounds every evening. You are already qualified, of course, as a level 5 pro to be there to play in the 18 rounds of the main event. So all we've got left to do is make the U.S. national team, and then you can play in all the team events as well. And I think, theoretically, if you win the individual worlds, the team worlds, and the Magic Online worlds, I think you probably play something like 40 rounds across the 4 days.
It would be crazy. My roommate actually said that I have to make the team on nationals this year, but
yeah.
I'm going to try. I don't even know if I want to play that much Magic in 3 days. Like, that would be really hard.
You were tied with 8 in Honolulu.
Yeah, like, playing 8 good rounds of Magic is hard. Playing 16 a day would be unreal. I couldn't see myself in the physical shape I'm in being able to get through 3 days of that. That would be the marathon.
Like, yeah, well, what you need to do is you need to set up the Magic Online just in a little corner of the bedroom and just, like, get a Stairmaster just in front of it. And you can just, like, play and constantly just be up and down. Like,
that's a really good idea.
Exercise bike with Magic, with laptop perched on the handlebars.
Powered by the bike.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
I think we should talk about a little business model.
Did we break it?
I think we may have broken the Magic Online fitness format. Awesome. So, that's in the Magic Online world. You're a winner there. But still to come, we have possibly the defining moment of your career to date. And it is only, here we are on Thursday, 5 days ago, 4 days ago only, and it's Grand Prix Washington. How much did it mean to you to not just, presumably, play some of the best Magic you've ever played, but to cross the finish line and hold the trophy?
It felt good. I don't know if it's hit me yet. I don't think it has. We went straight into testing for this Pro Tour. And the funny thing about that tournament was, after round 14, I didn't think I had a chance to top 8. Just like in Honolulu, I had 3 rounds left. Thought winning would take me to top 9 through 12. And I pretty much had the mentality that I'm going to play Magic till someone stops me. And they didn't stop me.
And no one stopped you. I think this could be a first. I'm going to call one of my interviewees a liar on air. Brad Nelson, you're a liar. Because when you finished that Grand Prix, you didn't go straight into testing, because I flew here with Tom Ross, and he said he'd come straight, and you'd been up all night partying.
Partying? I was all night because I didn't have a place to sleep.
Oh, okay. All right.
I sat at an airport. I watched Gabe Walls and Luis play some crazy limited format. Like, I didn't.
Sweet.
Yeah, I had fun. I celebrated, but not to the extent of, I can't wait to get home with my boys in Fargo to get real celebrating done. That's where the party's going to be.
Okay. Well, many, many congratulations. It is 1 year on. It's been quite a journey, both online and off, whether as for Freak or as Brad Nelson. Have you broken the format for this Pro Tour?
I guess you're going to have to wait and see.
Brad Nelson, for Freak. Many thanks.
Thank you.